Mercy Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate.
Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, our programs, social justice, different cultures, or our Bible. Today, my visitor is Brother Kieran Finn. Brother Kieran, a warm welcome and hi to my radio program. Brother Kieran Finn is a Champagne brother and Bible scholar. He's originally from Gisborne and has spent many years in adult education, teaching scripture in New Zealand and abroad. Brother Kieran, you've been here a few times and we know that you're very passionate about the Bible studies, and you are a Bible scholar for many years and have studied the Bible. You know a lot about the Bible. What do you think when some people say the Bible is the perfect book inspired by God, and then others say the Bible is full of inaccuracies and contradictions and can therefore by no means be considered to be perfect? What's your opinion?
Well, inspiration. Individuals were inspired to write, and they didn't all write the same thing. Like, I have here before me a book called The Gospel Parallels. I could find more contradictions than they could. But I asked the right question. Why are those contradictions there? Because each gospel writer told a particular story about Jesus. One Jesus, four gospels. Why are those contradictions there? What is the gospel writer trying to tell us? Now, I've got a classic example here. See, I've got very fond memories of a wonderful Mill Hill father named Jan Dyckman. And Jan, he took us as young teachers, and he would give us different versions of a particular piece of the gospel. And one of them was that well-known story of the Good Shepherd. And let me just for a moment look at that one, because it's so well known. And the easiest and the best example, of course, is the one from Luke's Gospel in that chapter on the parables of loss. And it goes this way. Which one of you, having 100 sheep and losing one of them, doesn't leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after the one that's lost until he finds it? When he's found it, he lays it on his shoulders and rejoices. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and neighbors, saying to them, "Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep that was lost." Now, notice that the sheep was lost. It's in the wilderness. He looks until he finds it. And take note, that darn lost sheep's going to be found. And when he lays it on his shoulders, the images we have of the Good Shepherd is, of course, the person of Jesus carrying the sheep on his shoulders. And he brings it back, and all the neighbors come in and rejoice with him over the finding of the sheep. Those are village shepherds. This is Luke's gospel, Gentile world, and the sheep are brought back into a pen. There are always a number of shepherds, young people in the family, those who are given a job. So you've got several shepherds. So the sheep are brought back, and then finally the shepherd comes back with it. And of course the people are worried about the missing shepherd, because they had lions in the Jordan Valley at the time, not the big African lions. You remember, may have seen the picture of David with his sling, or David wrestling with a lion to protect his sheep. Now that's Luke's story. And Matthew's story is different. And the question, why is it different? Well, let's for a moment go back to Luke and think now, who is Jesus speaking to? And it's the tax collectors and sinners who are murmuring about the fact that Jesus is associating with, the scribes and Pharisees are murmuring that Jesus is associating with tax collectors and sinners. Jesus came for the lost, so he tells the story of the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the two lost sons that we call the parable of the prodigal son, who should be the parable of the prodigal father. But the excluded ones, and I love that word murmur, because in the Old Testament, in the desert, they're always, the Jews, the Israelites are always murmuring about the conditions in the desert. Now, contrast. Listen to Matthew and listen very carefully to how it's different. What do you think? If a shepherd has 100 sheep and one of them has gone astray, it's strayed. It's not lost. It's strayed. Does he not leave the 99 on the mountains, not in the wilderness, and go in search of the one that went astray? And if he finds it, truly I tell you, he rejoices over it more than over the 99 that never went astray. So it's not the will of your Father in heaven that one of these little ones should be lost. Now, the fact that it's gone astray, it's strayed from the community, it's a little one, and in the Gospel of Matthew, the Gospel of the Church, the little ones are the recent converts into the Church. On the mountains, well, that's where sheep in Israel were fed, and they were penned in little sort of pens or whatever.
So they had a fence and were protected.
Yes, and there'd be a gate there at the beginning. And incidentally, John doesn't have this parable, nor does Mark. But John has, I am the good shepherd. I am the gate of the sheepfold. So that's the picture there on the mountaintop. Now, it's gone astray. And if he finds it, isn't that different from until he finds it? And then the will of the Father is that not one of these little ones should go astray. Now, I often think now, who do we look after in our church? The 99 who never stray, or the one that's gone astray? Now, that's also important, because who is this parable being told to in Matthew? It's to the disciples of Jesus and all those who step into their shoes down through history. Sometimes I think it would be a very good idea if the Holy Father said that all those in leadership positions in the church should reflect on Matthew chapter 18 once a month, because this chapter is the chapter that talks about those who give scandal, those leaders who give scandal, the millstones around their neck and thrown into the depths of the sea. It's a significant chapter on leadership in the church. And the very last parable that this chapter tells is the parable of the unforgiving debtor who owes 140,000 years of salary, of wages. And he's forgiven. And he won't forgive the person who owes him about a month's salary. Now, come on. Who in the church has debts of 140,000 years? Only popes, cardinals, bishops, priests, and the occasional scripture scholar. It sure is not the little people of the church. This chapter is about leadership in the church. Who is the good shepherd in Matthew? It's got to be the church leader. Who is the good shepherd in Luke? The person of Jesus. Now,
and you mentioned gone astray, and you mentioned the wilderness, because the wilderness, as you say, there were lions there. So the wilderness could be that the sheep got caught in a bush, or that a lion caught it.
Yes, and what happens when a sheep gets lost? It'll lie down and not move. And the shepherd rejoices over the burden of going and picking up the sheep and carrying it home.
Well, for those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz. www.tengaka.org/muffintalk or visit our website or Facebook page at Tengaka Waiora Mercy Spirituality Center. My visitor today is Brother Kieran Finn, and we are talking about contradictions in the Bible. Or maybe they're not contradictions, it's just a different view.
The differences, yes.
When you want to find out about news, then you Google in different newspapers, and then you make up what is really the truth, because each perspective might be different.
Right. Yes, I think that's important. The thing is, ask why the differences are there. Rather than being contradictions, they're expressions of the theology and the concern of the individual gospel writer. I mean, the main question for Jewish people was not, did it happen that way? The first question they ask is, what does it mean?
And you have to have another context.
Exactly, and context is critical. Walking home yesterday morning with one of our parishioners, he asked me, what's going on in that weird piece of the gospel where Jesus curses a fig tree? And I said, look,
maybe you tell the story of the fig tree before you can...
Well, the story of the fig tree is that Jesus is hungry, and he's walking with his disciples, and he sees this fig tree, and it's all in leaf. And he goes looking for fig to eat, and there aren't any figs. And Mark says it wasn't the season for figs. Now, the only other gospel that's got this particular story is Matthew. And Matthew scratches his head and said, oh, Mark, what are you doing with that line? So when he tells the story, he leaves it out. Luke looks at the story and says, I don't like it. And he leaves it right out of the gospel. Doesn't fit into the Lucan's narrative and Luke's theology and so on. But then what happens and what gives this account meaning is in the very next story, Jesus goes into the temple in Jerusalem, drives out the money changers, and so on. And then, on the way out after that, they're walking past the same way, and the fig tree is all withered. And Peter points at the tree and says, Master, Master, look at the tree. It's withered. And then you sort of say, well, what on earth is that all about? What's going on? It's the middle story. This is the famous Markan sandwich. Piece of bread, a filling that gives you what type of sandwich it is, and then the next filling to finish the story off. It's the temple is not producing its fruit. So all of a sudden, you can see why you've got that weird and wonderful side pieces of bread around the sandwich. And that's the same sort of thing that happens, of course, with the famous story of the raising of the daughter of Jairus. Jairus comes along to Jesus asking for his little daughter to be healed. And then on the way, the hemorrhaging woman touches his garment and her faith has made her well. And then we come and finish the story off with the raising of Jairus' daughter. And we've got a faith sandwich. Right? We had a fruit sandwich first. Now we've got a faith sandwich. And that's the way that these stories are told.
So you have this story and you put an example in it.
Yes.
And you don't say, for example, or it is similar to.
No.
But you tell another story and then you get back to the story.
Yep. It's like brackets around a central story, right?
But you wouldn't use the brackets if it didn't have a meaning in the context.
Yes, there's a sense in the middle that sort of flows out to both sides. But now going back to contradictions, the wonderful story of history's first deviled ham. Remember the story of the demoniac, the Gerasene demoniac? That's the wonderful story where there's this man in the tomb and it's in Gentile territory and Jesus heals this possessed man. He was so strong that he had broken chains and all the rest with demonic strength and so on. And the pigs happen to be nearby and the demons ask if they can go into the pigs. and they rush down into the sea, and thousands of them are, you know, are drowned. Instead of, I don't want to really go into that story, fascinating as it is, because it's one of the weirdest and most interesting of all of the healings of Jesus. But when, that's Mark's version, but when you come to Matthew's version, there were two of them. Two demoniacs are in the tombs. And the story of Bartimaeus, the blind man of Jericho. In Mark, you've got Bartimaeus, but when you go to Matthew, you've got two blind men, exactly the same part of the story as Matthew tells it.
Does Matthew always need a witness?
That's it, because in Jewish law, that's one of the better explanations, that in Jewish law you required two witnesses. So Matthew doubles up. Maybe Matthew thinks two's better than one. But there's always an explanation for the contradictions.
So also, so the story when Jesus had resurrected, and the one story there was one angel and the other one was two angels?
Two angels,
so also
yeah.
Matthew was two?
Well, again, you're doubling up on them. Two angels, well, that's where you have to go to your parallel, and you'll find out why you've got two angels, right? And again, there's always an explanation, and that's why we need to look at that. And again, on the topic of ones and twos, my favourite is the fact that in Mark and in Luke, Jesus rides into Jerusalem on a donkey. It's a peace, gesture of peace. But in Matthew, he rides into a donkey, a colt that has never borne the yoke. So Matthew goes, one, a donkey, two, a colt that's never borne the yoke. So he tells the story, Jesus rides into Jerusalem on two animals, and he threw his blanket over them.
Oh, my God.
Well, again, it might be two are better than one, but what is going on is that the prophecy of Zechariah, he's actually counting them up and getting two animals, even though in Jewish poetry, parallelism is what is going on. There's really only one animal.
But here you can see that must be a symbol, because how can he possibly ride on two animals at the same time? He would have to
one
have
foot on each. Yes, but I mean, that's the sort of thing that, you know, contradictions. Well, do you, I think only a donkey asked whether there was one, one animal or two animals. I think we need to just see a consistent pattern, and why has he got them? And you can find reasons for virtually everything. And this was rather important, because in Catholic theology, we have devotions. And the devotions, like the seven last words from the cross, and you get, my God, why have you forsaken me? That's the last words that Jesus speaks in Mark and Matthew. Then you come to, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they do. And then the beautiful evening prayer of the Jewish people, into your hands I commit my spirit. Now that's Luke's last words for Jesus. Then with John, I thirst. It is accomplished. That's the very last words of Jesus. Mother, woman, behold your son, behold your mother. Again, John. Then you have also, of course, in Luke's, those beautiful words, today you will be with me in paradise.
But in fact, none of the evangelists was present during the last words of Jesus.
That's exactly right. All of this is hearsay. And over 40 years for the first gospel, Mark, then you have Matthew and Luke, 50 years later, the oral telling of the stories and the theological shaping of the gospel writer, the message he wants to get across. That's the important issue. I mean, you take something, take up your cross and follow me. For the community of Mark, facing the aftermath of the persecution of Nero, the cross was a real possibility in their lives, so that you have to take up your cross. When you come to Luke, writing in the Gentile world, where the threat was not as real and imminent, The line is, take up your cross each day. And that, of course, comes into our own spirituality today with our own lives. But you can see the difference, and you can see the reason for the differences. Going back to those seven last words of Jesus, one of the things that really, it does bug me, if you take something like the Passion of the Christ, the movie, Jesus says the whole lot of those words on the cross.
All together?
One after the other. And we lose the theological thrust and the point that the individual gospel is expressing in those last words. The gospel of great forgiveness. Of course, Jesus is going to say, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And also, today you'll be with me in paradise, that last great act of forgiveness and acceptance. And in the gospel of the cross makes its influence felt right up to the last words of Jesus. My God, why have you forsaken me? Everybody fails in this gospel. They failed Jesus right up to the end. They all forsook him and fled. Peter denied him. Judas betrayed him. And then he turns to his Father. And that prayer, it does move. That psalm moves on eventually into a reconciliation and acceptance.
So we have to look at who wrote it down and for which audience it was meant.
And why it was written in that particular way. And that is why we find these so-called contradictions, because of the individual thrust of each gospel and the perspective they're trying to get across.
Just before the end of last year, we talked about the year C that we are in.
Yes.
Now. And that is also the point that since Vatican II, we have a different gospel.
Yes.
As the main gospel for the, yes, the church year.
Mm. And there are certainly individual perspectives there, like another Catholic devotion is the Stations of the Cross. And of course, Jesus is condemned to death in all the Gospels. Then he carries his cross in all the Gospels. The falling, the three falls, they're not in the Gospels, right? But he's meeting his mother. He doesn't meet his mother on the cross. He meets his mother at the cross. So all of these come out of devotion. Simon of Cyrene helps Jesus carry his cross. That's the fifth station. The interesting thing about that, carrying the cross, Simon of Cyrene does not appear in the Gospel of John. And one of the things that really interests people is, oh, that's not in the old Gospels. That's not in that Gospel. So Simon of Cyrene, then we have Veronica wipes Jesus' face. Now, nowhere in any Gospel do we find Veronica, but the name Vera Icon, true icon. The Acts of Pilate have got a woman wiping Jesus' face, and it happens to have been the woman who was healed of the hemorrhages. Jesus falls for the second time. He meets the women of Jerusalem. That is straight out of the Gospel of Luke, the compassionate Jesus. Falling for the third time, clothes taken off, nailed to the cross, dying on the cross, taken down from the cross. Yes, we get that account. Then, of course, being laid in the tomb. But it's interesting to sort of see which Gospels provide any of that material. I often think, wouldn't it be wonderful to have a Stations of the Cross devoted on each of the synoptic Gospels, the Gospel for the year? Yeah, certainly.
But I think that with the Stations of the Cross being in the church fixed,
yes,
it will be a bit difficult.
I know.
But
I know.
You can still tell the story according to the year of the
Gospel.
Yeah.
Like when the Pope visited Sydney, they had a beautiful Stations of the Cross. But I kept thinking that, you know, the Gospel of the year, wow, wouldn't it have been great to have just focused on that? It gives a variety. It also gives an enrichment and an understanding of the passion narrative of each gospel. Because what happened in the early centuries, there was a book written called the Diatessaron. Four in One, or One in Four, One of Four, by a man named Tassian. Eventually, I think he might have been declared a heretic, but his book was so popular it replaced the Gospels. And it was the main text in the early centuries until finally the church said, no, there are four Gospels, not just one. And so the Gospels were re-established in their individuality and their own beautiful individual perspectives.
And they were not written as a story. They were different pieces and they were put together.
No, they were all, it was all mixed up. Yeah, and sort of try. It's a bit like we went through a time, the lives of Jesus, and they just sort of tried to make one story out of the four Gospels. They're doing the same thing. And the differences are critical. I mean, look, we've just celebrated the Christmas season. And we just had recently the visit of the Magi. And there's a line there that says, they found him, they found the child with his mother. They found the child in the house with his mother. What happened to the stable?
Well, the stable came later.
No, the stable was in Luke's gospel. The house was in Matthew's gospel. Right? And that's really interesting because the differences, I always say we should list the differences between Mark and Matthew, and then we'll start to see how significantly different they are. That's where we get the interesting contradictions. For instance, if the child is in the house, that means the house is in Bethlehem. Mary and Joseph live in Bethlehem. Now, the child's born in Bethlehem, and the child is brought up in Nazareth. So look at the journey that's taken from Nazareth, Matthew, from Bethlehem to Egypt, and then return, and bypassing Judea because of Archelaus, then going up to Galilee, to Nazareth, and it seems clear from current awareness of the geography of the place, Sepphoris was a major city that was being built near Nazareth, and Joseph Tartecton was a builder, and they built in stone. Wood was too valuable, so he would have found employment. Being a sensible man, he found employment and wages for his family. So that's the journey that we get in Matthew. Now, Luke, they live in Nazareth, so Luke scratches his head and said, how do I get them to Bethlehem? And he draws on the edict of Quirinius. And we know now that edict wasn't until 6 years into the common era, which means it's 10 years too late. So now we've got another journey, a completely different geographical journey. Here's one of your so-called contradictions, but it's the path that each gospel writer has established. They can't both be right. The infancy narratives are virtually irreconcilable.
We have to continue right. That. Maybe we'll talk about the narratives on the infancy stories right. When we come closer to Christmas
right.
Again
okay.
Later in the year. And just want to mention a few things that are coming up in the Spirituality Center. That on Saturday, the 16th of February from 9:30 to 3:30 p.m., we have Sarah Cooper who will facilitate a retreat day with the title Rediscovering Wholeness of Life in Christ. How gratitude opens the way. And 1 week later, we will offer a morning with Father Chris Skinner, who will share and teach a number of his musical settings to the Psalms of the theme of gratitude. This music workshop will take place at St. Columbus Center in Vermont Street, Ponsonby, on Saturday, the 23rd of February, from 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock. And on the 22nd and 23rd of February, we'll have Margaret Fullwater, who will facilitate a introduction into dream work. And for all events, please register with us per phone at Auckland 09-638-6238 or via our website at www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. Wish you all a good Friday and a good week ahead. And thank you very much, Brother Kieran, for having come.
Thank you. All right.